Blog Talk Radio.
This is the League of A's and BC's. It's green and red and gold and black and blue. This is a league with two official languages and many unofficial languages. It's East versus West, wheat versus iron, love versus hate. This is a league where superstars are extraordinary and ordinary at the same time. It's a league of ice, of fog, of mud, and wind. And for one Sunday in November, it's the nation's glue. This is a league as diverse as a country, a league of Jacksons and Kwongs, Johnsons, Moscas, O'Shea's, and Haji Razulis. This is his league, her league, and their league. It's my league, and it's your league. This is our league.
It's that time of evening again, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio, and my name is Frank Stanishi, and I'm the host of Candid Frank Live. You are listening to the December 9th version, 126th show that we've done. It's quite a few, and with me is John Granger, but first allow me to prime the pump a little bit. As you all are aware, the coaching carousel continues. You know, when you think about it, you know, it's easier to discuss who has a full coaching lineup. I think Hamilton and Saskatchewan are okay for now, because George Cortez has thrown his hat in the ring for the final coaching job, which means that if he gets the job, Hamilton will be the only team with an intact coaching team, which to me it speaks well of it's a bubbling pot, that CFL. I mean, you know, everybody's throwing in different stuff. You're taking half-cooked pots here and taking stuff out of there and putting it over there, and before you know it, you don't have a clue who's coaching where. And some actually suggest, Mike, there is a Candid Frank tonight. What happened was I had a little bit of trouble. Nothing major, just something minor. Let me do this for Mike, because Mike, you know, is not sure that we've got a show tonight. There we go. Maybe that'll help. There we go. That should help. So yeah, it's been a real interesting week. We now have a new referee and chief VP. So they haven't got the big guy yet. They haven't got the prez. They just got the vice prez, the VP. And Johnson's going to be the guy. And he comes from he has a history, and that's Glenn Johnson, that is. He has a history prior to taking this new role, vice president of officiating. You know, he is an on-field official. He's someone that's admired by the team. He was, at one time, the big honcho. So obviously they're looking for somebody. You've heard on this program by many who listen to this show that it's quite possible the officiating hasn't been that good this year. And, you know, I'm inclined to agree. Absolutely. I'm inclined to agree that the officiating has been questionable at best in some instances. But is that because the officiating is terrible, or it is basically playing up to its ability and knowledge? That to me seems to be the big problem. more than even the fact that referees are as we discussed, we've discussed things like maybe I'll bring the guys in. We'll finish with the little bit that we got to do here. There's a mock draft we can talk about. I have it from a good source, not to name names, that possibly Collaros might be headed to Hamilton. Are the Riders going to lose anybody? Are they the ones who are going to lose the most? And the biggest news of the day has to be that a great Canadian running back who won MVP at the CFL coming out party is now the Lou Marsh winner as well, John Cornish. And then sadly, Bomber Labbé retires, and we can talk about that too. Anyway, that's about what I got to prime the pump. And while I have primed the pump, now I got John with me, and I don't recognize this other number. What's this other number? Who else do we have other than John Granger?
I think you have Chris over there, right, Chris?
Yeah, I'm here.
Another
new gentlemen.
Number.
It's Skype. I don't know what they come up as, okay?
Yeah,
I'm just going in on Skype.
Yeah, rotate. Well, good evening, gentlemen. And you did filter it very well, Frank. Lots to talk about. The referee thing is very interesting, and it's always going to be interesting until they do what they do in the NBA, where they replay any sort of funny plays or challenges that the coach usually has to throw the flag in. In the last 2 minutes, I think it should be automatic. I think hopefully they're going to implement that, copy that from the NBA. It's worked for them. I mean, there was a lot of questionable calls that they were embarrassed by. I think you can correct me, Chris, I think maybe there was like two or three that they apologized about. And the last one we remember was the one in Guelph, right? So, the referee, the president or the referees or the VP, whatever you want to call the puppet, if you want to call him, that he's representing the management of the league, okay? And they got a little bit too much slack because I have a feeling that Mr. Smith in Montreal put a big, huge complaint in on the revenue that he lost because of the poor referee, okay? So he's got a lot of push. And they got a point, they got a point. So they're putting another body in. You know, when we heard Frank and Chris, when we heard about the resignation earlier this week, or was it last week? I think Chris, you posted it on Facebook, and I kind of looked at that and I thought, well, isn't this exactly what everybody was anticipating would happen? This is just another way of taking the blame.
Of who? Tom Higgins?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, you saw that my post today that says Tom Higgins absolutely denies the fact that he resigned. He was fired.
Oh, I didn't see that one. Okay. So
yeah,
he's really
pissed off at the league for making it look like he quit. He says, I did not quit. I'm 59 years old, and I'm now looking for a job. I would not have left my position.
Hello. Okay.
Well,
isn't
that the assumption that you heard from me in as far as his departure was concerned? When it comes to a position like that, you don't quit. You get fired. I mean, it's a pretty good position, right?
Yeah. Well, it's a good position. I mean, you're a president of something.
No, but John, the truth is, there's a lot less pressure. I hate to say this, and maybe it shouldn't be true, but I'm going to say it. There's a lot less pressure on being in that position than it is in the position that other people have that rely on that position being successful. In other words, not only prudent, but accurate.
I don't think that Tom Higgins was really the problem with the officiating on the field this year.
No.
Or with anything else. If anything, I'd like to throw some fingers at Jake Ireland. But
guys, like I said, until they rectify it, they're having problems in the NFL, never mind our refs. You can't blame them on everything. There's things that they can't see, and this is what we have our present technology out there for. And it's either they utilize it and they change the rules and they bring it in. It's like baby steps. They have to see enough problems like this you know, where the owners take the initiative and say, we got to do something because it just costs Montreal a lot of money. And I'm sure Montreal management is freaking out. You know what I mean? That could have been their play, regardless if it wasn't maybe the Grey Cup, but at least the Eastern Final, and they're still losing out on something, right? So, you know, and there was a lot of questionable calls during the season. Like I said, I don't really know I can't remember the number, but I just know that there was at least two or three that the league came out and admitted to making a mistake. And we've heard that in the NFL, too.
I don't think we're going to argue about there having been bad calls this year. So we'll all agree that there have been bad calls. Well, yeah, right. We'll all agree, John, we'll all agree there have been bad calls. There's bad calls in every league. Yeah. Even the NFL, the almighty NFL, has admitted to making errors, much like the CFL did. The next question is, so now we've resolved the – Chris, thank you for the information that, in fact, as previously reported, it wasn't a suicide, it was murder. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, he didn't commit suicide, you know, Harry Carey. He left with somebody else's invitation, not his own. So, mm-hmm. do you think guys is that part of the solution now that they get rid of this guy and then we can talk so is this the guy that becomes the GOAT and can things change now that he's gone?
Well, I don't know. You want to hit this one first, Chris?
Well, I mean, I don't think that things are going to change any more than what they are. I don't think that anybody wants them to. Otherwise, they would have. I mean, Tom Higgins was not stopping them or preventing them from changing this in any way, shape, or form, the officiating on the field. There's no way. I mean, Tom was adamant about cleaning up the refereeing when he took the position. And I think he was stonewalled all the way along. So whether it's a referees union, whether it's the league, whether it's the board of governors or whoever it was, I think Higgins was bashing his head against the wall most of the time because there's no way he was happy with the on-field officiating this year. He couldn't have been. Nobody was.
Well, he had to come out and say that they made a mistake a couple times, right? So, yeah, I guess he wouldn't
That's
be happy. And I think, you know, I think in general, guys, if he was, you know, a president of anything else, and they had, how could we call it, if they had an assembly line and, you know, something was defected, the president has to take the blame for the defect. And if you want to call it that, is it going to be rectified by putting another guy in there? Perhaps. Perhaps maybe they're all going to get together, pull their socks up, and call better games. I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they have to, guys, use the technology that they got. And they have to have a little bit more leeway like they do in American college where it's instantly reviewed and it takes less than, you know, 15, 20 seconds at tops to make a call. And anything that's questionable during the play doesn't have to be, you know, at any particular time in the game. But even during the game, they're using that kind of a rule very well down there. It seems to work. And with the NBA, you know, what they did was they implemented something worth the last 2 minutes, that everything is reviewable, shots, touches, fouls, not even fouls, but, you know, inbound, outbound kind of stuff, whatever. And it seems to work. At least there's no question at the end that, oh, the wrong team got the ball, you know? So,
you know,
again.
The one thing that I don't understand about this whole thing on the officiating side of things is the coach has two challenges, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And if he challenges a play and he is correct that the officiating was in error, the officials were in error, he loses his challenge. Why is he penalized?
Well,
I
agree.
The official was wrong. He shouldn't lose his challenge. He should only use his challenge when the challenge is overturned.
You know, I'm thinking, because I'm getting confused between the NFL and the CFL now, and if you're talking about that, I thought the rule was that if he wins the challenge, he doesn't lose a timeout, and he doesn't lose a challenge. I thought he loses a timeout and a challenge automatically, that the punishment for getting it wrong is a timeout. But he lost the challenge. But if you get it correct, you still got your two challenges. No? Or is that the NFL?
The NFL. My understanding, John, as well, is because Milanovic ran into a lot of trouble there, where there were a lot of challenges he could have tossed out against Hamilton. I remember that specifically because I was at the game. He had a lot of challenges. And he won a couple of challenges, but he had no more challenges left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think Scott needs practice with that, or he needs better guys in the booth.
That's another debate for a few more minutes from now.
No, if you win a challenge, you should be able to win 15 challenges in one day.
You should be able to win 100. You should be able to win 100. Who cares how many?
Because the officiating should be right. Exactly.
Right. And you're rewarding the officials. You're rewarding the officials for an error and punishing the team for an error.
Yes.
Even if it doesn't punish you at that second, when you start, you got to be careful when you challenge, because you want to challenge something that you're 100% right on, because you're only getting two of them.
Right. Well, I still think the American college has it right. The referee is up to his discretion, up in the booth. He'll dispute any play during the game at any time, and the coach still has, their own challenges to throw in if the guy in the booth doesn't challenge it. You know what I mean? And it seems to work. Why can't we do that? Well, we'll see what the new guy will do. That's the bottom line with that.
Who is the new guy?
Have
we heard who the new guy is?
George. They brought back George. They brought back George Johnson. Glenn Johnson. Sorry, Glenn Johnson.
Glenn
He's a VP now. Let's see. I'll give you some background. He retired from the field after 24 years. He refereed 416 games, 11 Grey Cup games. he actually was the ref when the U.S.-based team won the cup, that being Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And,
okay.
So he's got a lot of experience.
Yeah.
Why?
Yep.
Because
what,
in
the
American
Cup, go
won?
To America? Yeah, that's out of here.
Okay, I get that. Well, here's a quote from Mark Cohan. While Glenn's talents as on-field official will be sorely missed, we are absolutely thrilled he has agreed to take on this tremendously important role with the league office. His officiating experience, expertise, pedigree, professionalism, and passion for our game, and truly second to none, his leadership abilities have been proven throughout his career, in the boardroom as well as the football field, and he is perfectly qualified to direct and develop our strong team of CFL officials. So Glenn retires from the field following, as I said, 24-year career. Now, the thing of it is obviously, Cohan isn't shy from telling it like it is. This referee has experience officiating, he has the ability to lead, and he has boardroom experience. he knows how to play the game. There's a game that's being played outside of the game. But I hope that now that he's been on the field and he's coming back up, as a VP, that he can bring some of these difficulties that have presented themselves, and some of these silly mistakes, which John and I, and I don't know, you do too, right, Chris? You agree with this? The way they handle the way they handle the flags are ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Of course.
It should be two failures, you're done. End of story.
No. Okay.
Are we agreed? If that was the number, I mean.
Let's dream on that.
You're talking about the challenge flags, not the referee challenge.
No, the challenge flags.
Okay. Okay, there's something else here I want to add to Glenn's resume, which I did not know about. I just reading it on CFL.ca.
There you go.
Glenn brings significant breadth to the officiating department, having also been a professional baseball umpire and Baseball Canada's umpire-in-chief, where he implemented national training, development, and evaluation programs. He added international experience to having umpired several world championships and the Olympic Games in Atlanta in 1996.
So what does that tell you? John, we've had this conversation before, and I've always said that do you think maybe this guy is more qualified? It sounds like he's more qualified. And do you think they were going to give this position a bump in salary with the new contract? And I believe this. They've got to spend some money on officiating. And if this is the beginning of them spending some money on officiating, I'm going to applaud it. And if they're going to make sense of some of the nonsense that's been out there this year, again, with the challenge flags, and also get into the new millennium, you know, with the headshots and stuff, there have been some questionable calls and questionable uncalls when it comes to headshots. And there has to be more of a, more of a wider policy on how you punish. It just seems so cut and dried right now. What do you guys think his challenges are going to be, John?
Well, I think his challenge is going to be that he's praying and hoping that there's not going to be any referee screw-ups in a vital decision-making game. Okay, what I mean is something that is a game caller. And those are the ones that really bug us, guys. It's not the ones during the game. Perhaps the one that during the game swayed the momentum. And
okay, but John, how does he? We all understand that. I understand that 1,000%. We all know that penalties can kill you, right? But what can he do? What can he do to resolve it? Like, what do you like? You had some ideas off the air when we talked that sound really good. You were referring to the NBA and. The 2 minute, or was it? It's not the NFL. It's not the NFL.
It was. What I mentioned earlier about the NBA. Yeah, about the 2 minute warning, meaning that anything within the 2 minutes, it is automatically reviewed. There's not something that has to be challenged, and even a penalty. You know what I mean? Even a penalty that doesn't get called gets challenged immediately upstairs. Like that incident we had in Guelph where. It was obvious there was a tackle. So one of the Argo linebackers touched the guy's ankle where the guy flew over two linebackers and he got up and he ran it in up to the five-yard line. And, Scott had to throw the challenge in for a ridiculous thing like that when it was pretty obvious that he was touched. So things like that would automatically be reviewed rather than just letting it go. You know what I mean? So I think there's some substance to saying, why not try everything in the last 2 minutes? It's up to the upstairs to call it. Why wouldn't that work? Those
Chris?
Debates about, last 2 minutes wouldn't happen.
I don't disagree with that, but I honestly don't trust the upstairs officials. I don't trust Jake Ireland up there in doing that. There are times where that was obviously went one way and he overturned it or anything else, and it was. The man has been biased his entire refereeing career, and now they put him up in a booth and in charge of television replay. It's garbage.
I don't remember anything that he overturned. I don't remember anything I definitely could be wrong, but I just don't recall anything that we saw that was obvious, and then he overturned it, and it was turned into a touchdown or something. Sure, there's probably plays that it's something happened against BC or something that I saw happen against Toronto that we didn't agree after the call came in. Like, I remember that one where, we had a lot of calls.
No. Hang on, John.
Yeah.
More than a few times this year where you're listening to the commentators on the thing and they go, this fumble is a fumble. That is an obvious fumble. This is a fumble. I don't know what's going on. And then the officials comes back and it says, this is not a fumble. Okay, we saw most of the same angles that they do. The ball is out, the knees are not down, it's a fumble, and yet it's called down. Okay, the video replay turns around, it's not a fumble, we hold up the position on the field of the officials. And you can see plain as day on the TV, we're looking at it from a zillion miles away, and we can see that it's a goddamn fumble.
If it was against the Argos, if it happened, probably would stick in my mind, but if it was general play, I just don't recall anything that really kind of hung out there that was, debatable. You could be perfectly right, Chris. I'm not debating that at all. I just don't remember anything against the Argos. I remember a couple of plays where we had problems with this, quarterback roughing the passer and also the receiver who's the defender trying to go through the receiver. Remember those, Frank?
Over the top.
Where,
you're not allowed to go over the top, the back.
He's going for the ball. He's going. So if the
after the ball over the offensive guy, the receiver.
Yeah, it's crazy. That kind of stuff doesn't make sense to me. Okay, but what's he going to do, Frank? And what's he going to implement? I mean, he's going to have to definitely, when there's a new sheriff in town, everybody sharpens their pencils up a little bit and takes attention and notes. So he's going to come in there pointing out how he can rectify matters. And that always happens with new management turnover, okay?
Yep.
It's not going to be status quo.
Chris, did you want to add something?
Sure. I mean, he's 24 years on the field. If this man does not have some ideas of how to change his own profession, then nobody does. He knows how this game is played. He knows how it happens out there. And he knows what needs to be – as an official, he would say, I would have liked to have been able to do this, or I would have liked to have been do this, but the rules handcuff me to doing this. I can't do this or I can't do that. Well, he now has the ability to go in and change those.
So
anybody knows what's the matter with it. It's him.
Good point.
So in other words,
well said.
Okay.
Yeah.
In other words, Chris, I want to make sure I understand you. This guy comes with the opportunity because of his background to lay out the groundwork for erasing some of the issues that are of concern to us, the fans. And the way he'll do it
I would have to believe so.
Right? And that's what you'll hope. That's me too.
I think concerned, Frank, just a little correction, concerned that the owners have, not more fans. I think the fans are always going to have a concern.
No, I understand that, John. John, yeah. I understand that. That's why I exaggerated about the boardroom. That's why I talked about the boardroom. And I insisted on making sure people heard what I said. He has experience with the boardroom, but let's realize that that's a given, right? I mean, the people who own the teams run the show. I'm just saying, for the benefit of the fans, there should be a better view of transparency for us, so that it looks like it's fair and it stays fair, so that we don't have people like Christopher Jones concerned with the bias of somebody upstairs. So maybe, with this extra money, they can get people they feel more confident with and they can afford to hire. And that's why it's important to me that this money that they're finding all of a sudden, thanks to TSN and the TV contract, that they use it to help make the credibility of the CFL that much stronger. And I think, Christopher, that's what you're trying to say, ultimately.
100%. 100%.
Right? So now
the beginning of the week when Tom Higgins was fired, I was very upset because I don't think that Tom Higgins is a scapegoat here. I don't think he needed to be one. He's been screwed over on numerous times. He's a good guy. I like him. Let's just plain and simple. I like Tom Higgins, and I don't think that he should have been pushed out of the position that he did. Now that we find out that Glenn Johnson is being put into that position, better qualified, the person to make all the changes, I understand removing Tom Higgins from the play. I feel bad for him because he's such a nice guy. But for the betterment of the league, this was a good move.
At least it sets the table for the possibility that it's a good move.
Yes.
If they play
it
right.
6 hours ago, I wasn't happy with it.
If they play it right. They have to play it right. And playing it right means they've got to use his knowledge base, trust his knowledge base, just by what you mentioned. So he has experience in a pretty pressure-packed league, which the World Cup of Baseball is. You know, it's not small time, right? That's impressive.
No, agreed.
Right?
It is very impressive. It's at the Olympics.
Right. So it's impressive, which means that this guy has some experience on how to, how shall I say this? To distribute knowledge in a smooth flowing manner that the referees can gather, grasp, and act on. You know, because that's the hard part. Because these guys, John and I had this discussion off air, and I refer to them as part-timers. Is that an unfair comment?
Yes.
Well, they are.
I think seasonal work is your full-time when you're working during the season of that season, okay? So you can't call a seasonal worker who's working, full-time. I mean, construction workers are seasonal workers, but they're not technically part-time. They're doing 12 hours, 14 hours a day, and no one consider that part-time because they work maybe 6 months or 8 months of the year,
Okay,
not
John,
full-time.
John, hang on. These guys have full-time jobs, don't they?
Yes. Of course.
So if this is what they do while they're doing full-time work, they don't – I mean, this isn't the government where you can get two paychecks in one day.
Right, but Frank,
you know,
full time and part time. Let me correct you on that, because they could have full time jobs, but like the players, they take an absence, leave of absence during the seasonal work that they attend to, which is football.
John, but football players themselves, CFL football players are part timers. A buddy of mine was a line judge. A buddy of mine was a line judge, and he did it all. I'll have to call him and ask him. Actually, you know what? You know Doug Lewis, right?
Yeah.
Okay. His brother was a line judge for the CFL.
Is that right? Not the producer brother.
Oh yeah, the golf
You're
teacher
kidding.
Producer. Bruce, yeah,
wow.
Bruce Lewis. He was and I'm not going to quote anything now on his behalf because I don't really remember any. I'm not going to state stuff to make it sound like I'm attributing it to him. I just know he did it, and trust me when I say this, he couldn't quit his job to work for the CFL. You know, there's no way it's a full-time job. No way it's anything.
Okay, John.
Yeah.
John, I have a question for you here. These referees, they take a leave of absence for the football season. How much prep work do you think they have before a game?
Well, I'm not saying like a full month of leave of absence. You know, you schedule time off with your employer and say, look, I'm going to be away for 4 days. During this week, I'm not going to be available.
Or they use vacation days. It'd be stupid of them to call in sick because the boss could be watching a CFL game and there he is on the sidelines wearing striped shirt.
Well,
right.
Guys,
so more than likely, what we're saying here is being a CFL official is a hobby.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
They may get some money out of it, but it's a hobby for them.
Yeah.
Right.
So
you're not
going to call
them
a part-time worker.
What they earn.
No.
But, you know, technically from a business side of point of view, they have to label them something for the Revenue Canada, and you can't put them down as a hobby employee. You know, you have to put them down. You have to give them a label.
Oh, John, sure you can.
Well, they can be a contract worker.
Hobby employee?
No. Seriously, sure they can, because they can get money that's called an honorarium, and they can get their equipment paid for. Like you heard... I'm not sure how correct Manasseh was last week, but there is some truth to getting an honorarium and getting a stipend that isn't that, you know, wonderful, but it makes what you're doing, you know, worthwhile to that extent. And these people actually love the game.
Well, yeah.
And I believe I bet you they love the game more than the money they earn. I'll say that.
Oh, sure.
I'll stick to that one.
Well, I'm sure.
What do you think, Chris?
They have to. I mean, it's similar to the players.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And on even a smaller scale. And I would suggest even on a smaller scale, because unless what they're doing now is they're sort of, they've just hired the Ricky Ray of officiating to run their league. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know? There could be parallels. I mean, but you got to realize too, the meat of the guys, most of the guys don't earn that much who play in the CFL. Not by sporting standards. You know, not by professional sporting standards.
No.
Right.
You know, so the players do it for love too. And I doubt the officials. You'll be able to put them even in the same snack bracket as the players.
Well, let me ask you a question here. Now that we're going to have an additional team this year, do they give them more hours, or do they increase in employees?
There can only be four games in 1 week. So if they have four teams of officials, there's no reason to have a fifth team. Okay, Glenn Johnson's just retired, so somebody has going to have to fill his position and move up somewhere or bring him in from CIS or whatever else, but there's no reason to have more than four officiating teams.
Okay.
The only thing we might lose, I haven't seen the schedule yet, and none of us have seen the schedule yet, Christopher or John, but we probably will lose that bye week where all the teams take it off. Now, there'll be automatic bye weeks every week for someone.
That's going to go back the way it was.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
That's the way it was when I was in the league before.
Right. So there won't be more than
four games.
Who the
hell wants a bye week in week one?
Yeah. I know.
I got a week one bye week.
Do
awesome.
You?
Well, maybe somebody who loses their quarterback in an exhibition game and you know needs the recovery time. That would be, but, you know, of course, nobody wants it after 1 week or in the first week or whatever. It would be kind of strange, but we'll see how it plays out. Look, there's a lot of variables that in play here, like we said in the previous shows. You know, I'm interested in the 16th and the draft, but more interested, really, guys, in the contract negotiations with the Players Association.
Are we, John? Let's not jump all over the place, okay? Well, I get to make that decision. That's a lovely thing.
Oh, I'm done with it, so you can carry on.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm
done. So basically, we don't need any more officials. And I just wanted to add something else, and that is that the NFL this year has created a situation where they have, even though the games haven't changed, the amount of games that are being reffed hasn't changed, they've actually brought in backup refs for every game. Because of their concern, it was their way of working out how to get rid of the guys who are having a bad week or guys who haven't been doing well recently, and they don't have to go through the embarrassment of letting this guy go. They already have somebody there already. And they're working it out so that they're filtering out the less effective officials much quicker. And there's a reason for that. They're very seriously concerned about officiating and the standard that officiating, you know, has at this point in the NFL. And there's a lot of pressure because of so much gambling. Now, the reason I wanted to mention that is because you mentioned, Christopher, that they might not bring in an extra crew. I think they might have to bring in an extra crew because they're going to have either a floating crew or a crew that's available in the event something happens that we don't know. An official gets sick and they decide, you know, instead of letting them fight through it, they have another official to take over. An official's going through a tough time in life that we don't need to hear about, and maybe it's not a good week for you to official. You step back and we got this other guy. I guess what I'm trying to say is that there has to be a way to create an environment for the officials that they're emotionally consistent and more mentally prepared, you know? And if they have to take a week off for learning something or being educated something, because, like John says, maybe these guys take their time off work, you know, for a long time, you know, over the season. Let's say they do have the ability to back away from their job, at least during the season. They can also, during the season, take some time for some, upgrading of their weaknesses, because we don't know where a referee's weak until he makes a mistake.
Yeah, we do. Andre Pruitt. He's just garbage straight across the board.
Yeah, okay. And then, but if they don't have another referee to replace him with, they got to use him, right?
Well, I understand what the way that it is now, but
I'm talking about a motivational
thing. Instead of looking at it as the CFL with a practice roster, why don't we look at the NFL with a farm team? And why don't we just call a referee up from the minors?
Like
from other football league.
You know, like from college?
Sure. Okay.
Well, what would be the next step?
A good hang on, Frank. Let me go.
No, I'm with you.
If you're going to have an official and you want him on the top of his game, you don't want him to be riding the bench the entire season and then be called in at the last minute to do a play. You want him to be working on the top of his game, officiating games week in, week out, and then say, okay, now you got to come play here. So it would be much better to bring somebody up from the minor leagues than it would be to pull somebody off the bench.
Okay. So is that not, well? That, you know what? We can both agree that neither has been tried, and both may need to be considered, and they both may be being considered at this time after this hiring. Because I have a feeling this guy understands the bigger picture, which is good. Officiating
looks like
more
that's
than just
why
going on
it.
The field. Yeah, it sure does look like they did it that way, because really the previous director of officiating was really, his history was as a general manager. Am I right?
Tom Higgins?
Yeah.
No, he was a coach. He was a two-time CFL coach.
That's what
year.
I'm talking. He was a management guy, a coach, a GM.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I thought you said a manager.
Yeah, no. Well, he was in the player side of the equation, the bringing in of players. He wasn't really in the official side. He wasn't in the league. He didn't come from the league office end of the business. He came from the playing side.
No, but that's why I like the appointment in his position to start with. Right? I thought that new blood, looking at it from a different perspective, when Tom Higgins was appointed vice president of officiating, it was a really cool, you know, thinking
hire.
Outside of the box, let's grab somebody that's not there. I mean, I thought that was a really good thing. Now, I don't know if that was an experiment that failed.
I think that's what it was.
But I like the direction in which they're going now.
Well, they're going with a guy with a lot of officiating experience on the organizational side.
Yes.
Not just a
referee. The implementation of training programs and education and all of that stuff that he has done with the baseball side of Baseball Canada is exactly what we need in the CFL.
More organized.
I hope we need it.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
National training, development, and evaluation programs.
Perfect. Okay. So we think that this is a good thing then for the CFL, right? John, do you think it's a good move?
Well, it's better than not to do anything. It's got to be
done. In other words, better than not leaving the guy that was there doing what he was doing.
The other guy was defending the referees. The owners didn't want to hear the defense. It cost them money in Montreal. It was a lousy call. And somebody felt they got ripped off. Someone had to go. He didn't like the fact that he was being blamed when he was just defending and doing his whatever possible thing he could do. And, again, you don't talk back to the bosses if the bosses think that you're not doing good enough. And so now what Chris says that he said, you know, publicly that he was more or less pushed out and it wasn't a volunteer resignation or whatever, just kind of solidifies exactly what was going on behind the doors kind of thing.
So there's no doubt that he's gone. Yeah, and he's making and they're making a bold move in a different direction.
Right.
And we're all good with a different direction because we didn't like that direction that they were in or on.
You got that right.
Okay, so we all agree on that.
I don't think anybody liked the officiating this year. No, this is good.
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. Ticat fans did.
Although they had
so did the Ryder fans.
The
Ryder fans.
We don't have to go there, guys. They just have to be the lucky. They just happen to be the lucky teams in the right spot when the official had the game in his hands.
I'm
kidding.
Yeah. And if you believe that, I got some swampland down in Florida for sale.
That's right.
Okay. Let's.
Hey,
John,
that's expensive land. Don't make fun about the swampland in Florida, dudes. That's expensive, acreage down there now. Okay. So everybody who made fun about that swampland in Florida, well, you know, it's big time money now because they're running
Disney World was a swamp. John, Disney World was a swamp.
That's
Disney was smart
too.
Enough to buy a swamp, and he turned it into Disney. Makes a pretty good penny today, especially from me and my kids and wife. We lost Christopher again, but I'm sure he'll be back again. All right, John, you wanted to talk about free agency, you wanted to talk about free agents, right? We can talk about free agents now. I think we beat the dead horse that is the officiating.
Yes, I think so, a little bit. Well. There was a mock draft list posted today by the CFL website, and it, at least the writers that write on that site kind of gave their impression of what each team's breakdown players were. And I read Don Landry's list regarding the Argos and the concerns and the players that are out there that possibly will be picked up. He's obviously said that Ricky Ray is, you know, done deal. That's not going anywhere. But there was a couple of interesting ones where I think you brought it up and somebody on the show brought it up about Cackard and would it be a viable for the Argos to protect him considering his, injury-prone season? I think just bad luck. I don't think the guy is an injury-prone player. But it's something that evidently has been talked about, and it would be a little bit surprising to me if they didn't protect him. But that was interesting. And then one that I kind of was a little bit shocked that he still, even the thought of not protecting him would be Jason Pottinger. I think you can't buy passion and heart like that. and you kind of it's priceless. So, and a Canadian kid from Toronto, I definitely wouldn't want to see him leave the team. But you know, I guess if they don't protect him or and he's out there, he's not going to be far. But Ottawa, but it would be a shame to lose Jason out there, and I really hate seeing that. Other than that. You know, Barnes is available. Receiving-wise, I'm kind of wondering, are they going to leave him out there? But the Cackert story, Frank, what would you do?
Well, this is tough. This is
I
tough.
Know.
Yeah,
it's a question,
But to make a long story short, yeah, Christopher's internet went down. Well, as far as he's concerned, they know better than anybody, you know, what his condition is. Because really, that is the key. They know his condition. They haven't told anybody his condition. And Ottawa would have to take a chance, right? But this guy can do it all. He can run, he can block, he can catch, he can run after catches. You know, it'd be a gamble if they put him out there. You know, when you have to consider what you're getting instead of him if you don't take him. Like, at the end of the day, they're going to be looking at a couple of guys like that, I bet you.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a question of whether they pluck one, you know, to take the for sures and then take a flyer on somebody. If he's the best flyer out there, they might take him. They really might.
I honestly think they shouldn't leave him out there. He's a young kid. He rehabs really quickly. He's really smart when it comes to taking care of himself and his health. And when he had the knee problem, the knee injury, he rehabbed really, really well. He looked like he got his bounce back. He didn't seem like he missed a step. And, you know, knee injury is a knee injury, especially for a running back. Now, it's even more serious, I imagine, breaking your ankle and where you take a lot of pressure and you make your cuts with, you know. We'll see, Frank. I'd hate to think that the franchise that I signed with and I had a chance to go play for the Jets and stuff and wanted to come back and showed them my commitment in them now didn't kind of show their commitment in me. I would hate to be the player in his shoes having to come back and kind of fight for my position because of a couple of bad breaks that I had, pardon the pun. So, you know, I we'll see what happens with Chad. The other interesting one, to get off of Toronto, was something that one of the Calgary reporters wrote was that, Calgary is having a real hard decision on who they're going to protect the QB.
And I thought we knew that. We knew
really?
That.
Wasn't
yeah,
I
we knew.
We
knew
a debate.
We did have a debate, and I don't think. Well, the debate, John, is real simple. You got three quarterbacks who offer three different upsides. You know, do you keep the veteran? I don't think they'll keep Glenn. I don't think they'll keep Tate. You know, I'll speak for Christopher while he's not here. If he gets his internet back, Tate is injury prone. So by process of elimination, I think you know what I'm saying.
Right. Well, in Tate's, position, that's a player that I would question the injuries. That one that he took last year with the shoulder dislocation and being out, that was a shock because it wasn't even a hit. It was just bent the wrong way or something, went down the wrong way, and that was a little bit of a shock to me. The concussion stuff, he's a hard-nosed quarterback. I mean, he likes to get dirty in there, and I like that about them, but he's also got a good arm, Frank. I mean, when you look at him, and he does know how to jump out of the pocket, but if he's protected well, and he's given a chance to kind of zone in and find his receivers, that kid could move the ball down the field like last year,
But, John, can't Bo do it too? Bo Levi Mitchell, can't he do it as well?
But I never seen a guy like Tate move the ball down the field last year, Frank. I mean, I hated the guy because he was so good. okay? When he went on the field, I mean, in one possession, goes down the field, bang, 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 bang. You know, you can blame our defense on it or whatever, but he wasn't just doing it with Toronto. When he, like I said, when he gets his protection, and I like Tate. I wouldn't get rid of him. I wouldn't get rid of him. I don't know. I think maybe Glenn is the guy, perhaps, is run out of time because, I mean, you know, you got a younger quarterback and the experience in Glenn, younger in Tate. Tate's got a lot of, you know, he's getting his experience as time goes on. And do Tate and Cornish really get along? I mean, you've seen him a couple of times come off the field.
Well, that's what happened last year in the game. Was it against the Argos? No, it wasn't against the Argos. It was the week after. They had a debate. Chris, are you back? Christopher, are you back?
I'm here. My internet's not very stable.
Oh, jeez.
I know.
Mike wanted to know if we were doing a show tonight. I sent him a message.
Townsend?
Yeah. He wasn't sure we were doing a show tonight. But that's neither here or there. Okay, we were talking, Christopher, if it starts to work. We were just talking about the free agency. We talked a little bit about the Argos, and we were just digging into Calgary. And we were having the weekly debate about the quarterbacks from a different perspective. Now, specifically, who's going to be protected. I noticed that the reporter here that wrote on Calgary agrees with me, and I agree with him, that Bo Levi Mitchell is the guy to protect. What do you think?
We lose Chris again?
I don't know.
I'm kind of here.
Chris, if you've got a phone number, you can message it to me and I'll call you.
Sure.
You just message me on Facebook and I'll call you.
Yeah.
And then you'll get a better signal. So if you want to do that, just message me, give me your number, and I'll call you on that number. And we'll avoid this idiocy that is the internet. So that's what I think about Bo Levi Mitchell, John. I think he's the guy to keep, just because he's healthier.
Bo Levi, you just made me hungry by saying Bo Levi Mitchell. Sandwich time. I think it's sandwich time, Frank.
Is that what it is? Go ahead. We can take a break, but before we go, who else we got on the phone here?
What up, though? It's Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, y'all? Sorry, I'm late, man. I had to take care of some business.
No worries. I was worried that you didn't know there was a show tonight. And of all the nights, Christopher's having real big problems with his internet.
Yeah, you know what? I think the weather's bad everywhere because I'm down here in Mississippi right now, and we got freezing rain. I'm at the terminal.
Wow.
And, got freezing rain, and I got some work need to be done on my trailer, so I guess that's a sign for me not to be leaving out here tonight in this bad weather.
Yeah, no, it's not pleasant at all, to be sure. It's not pleasant at all. But we'll fix this problem with Christopher by calling him. And in that way, he doesn't have to worry about the internet. So we were just talking about the beauty of this new draft here, and how Ottawa has some pretty interesting decisions to make. But before they do, there has to be some decisions made by the teams, the GMs in particular, and CFL.ca had reporters around the league. I guess home reporters give their opinion on who will probably be protected and who will not and why. And I was just looking at some of them. I don't know if you had a chance to look into that stuff. So we talked about the Argos a little bit, and for the people who've just joined us, we discussed the gamble that Kackert would be. Caleros is a free agent. He may very well end up in Hamilton. Somebody mentioned that a couple of weeks ago, and it was actually a good mention because it looks like that's what's going to happen. That's what looks like.
Yeah, because you know what? A close source of mine just sent me an inbox on Facebook and asked me, is Caleros going to Hamilton? I said, well, you know, I'm about to call the show right now. So I'm about to get some insight on what's going on, and I'll let you know.
Well, I got to protect my source because I don't want to get my source in trouble. My source suggests that there's a contract offer on the table with Caleros right now from Hamilton.
Wow.
That's illegal.
Well,
they're,
no, I mean, you can have a
they're
contract.
Allowed
you can have a contract.
The fear is, the CFL's fear is this, or people outside the CFL, is that a player can sign a contract and not announce it till after the draft.
They can talk.
No, because he's not a free agent until February.
No, that's right. No, they can actually have a contract ready and sign it, but it won't be official till the day they are signed.
Right.
But
it's not one of those things. Yeah, it's not one of those things where they're tampering with another team's player. I mean, you know, especially the fact that he hasn't been re-signed yet. It's a motivational thing that the agent has to get the management to kind of push the signing. If you're not going to, then we get to listen to other offers. We just can't sign until a certain date. But
well,
they can throw out, you know, and say, hey, listen.
I know I'm going to hear something from Christopher that I agree with. Go ahead, Christopher. Use the magic word.
What?
Are you there? Are you there, Christopher?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. We can hear you fine. What's the word?
No.
What's the word that gets in the way of us having this discussion?
Well, I'm totally lost right now.
Tampering.
Tampering. Of course it is. But that's what I said just a minute ago.
That's what I just was trying to say. But okay.
It's tampering. You're not allowed to. You're not supposed to do that until February 15th comes along, or February 14th, or whatever the day is. And you're not supposed to talk to somebody else's team. This Caleros right now is the property of Toronto, and Toronto should have every opportunity to re-sign him. And they should have that until February.
And that's called a negotiation list.
Yes.
You can't offer a contract or discuss contract with a player who's on someone else's negotiation list.
Correct.
You're not supposed to.
I called it 2 weeks ago that Caleros was going to Hamilton.
Yeah, that's
it makes the most amount of sense. Go with Austin. He's the best mentor in the industry right now for this position that's looking for a quarterback and everything else. I mean, even today I said I was adamant that he's going to Hamilton, and the only other two cities that he would have gone to otherwise would have been B.C. and Calgary.
Well, I think, Frank, what your source was trying to, I mean, I recall you letting me know, was that they were telling you that there is talk at the Ticats that they've put something together that they would like to offer Caleros. Which
oh,
a
but
lot
they
of
haven't
people,
given it to them?
No, but they were, that's the way you phrased it to me earlier in the day, and I remember you saying that, and it was the fact that their office, has been putting or working on something to put together to possibly offer to him. The fact that they have something put together is just a sign to say, okay, well, we only got 10 days to wait, and you got to start the wheels in motion now. It's not as if they're going to wait until the 16th and say, okay, let's start offering right now. Well, they already have a list of players that they're going to try to go after, and the rumbling is, you know, it would make sense. Chris, it makes sense now. I can see how it would be a terrible jab in the Argos kind of initiative with Caleros. They train him, they prime him, they tutor him. Here you go, he's ready to kill us.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I saw your jaw drop last week when I said he's going to go to Hamilton.
I know.
You heard his jaw drop.
You know, made sense.
Well, I got a question. Because you guys are so smart, and you got it all figured out, and I got a question. All these timelines that are basically out there, you know, we talk about, you know, the day the Grey Cup is played, the day that this draft is being held, the day that the free agents go on the market, the day that you have the rookie draft, all these dates, for the most part, they're not just something the league puts together. Part of it is part of negotiation with the Players Association, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So if a player does something that isn't what was agreed to, he's kind of becoming, by definition, if a guy like Caleros is cherry-picking, right? I'm another player, I wouldn't like that. You know, you understand what I'm saying? Like, who does this hurt?
Well, he's allowed to do what's best in the best interest of him and his family.
And nobody out there is going to deny him that.
Right.
Okay? But the rules are in place at this point in time that says that he is not allowed to talk to anybody. Hamilton, even for them to say publicly that they are interested in Caleros is a violation of that agreement.
Oh, no one said anything about publicly. Frank never said that.
I never
nobody
said publicly either.
No, but you understand what I'm saying, right?
No, totally.
But,
yeah. And John, I understand what you're saying, and you're right. But that's why I'm asking the question, because I'm confused. It seems really early to be signing free agents, you know?
But
well,
no one's signing nobody. Listen, guys, right now, the GMs have sat down with their free agents who are being released. Jim has sat down with Barnes, with Caleros, 2 days after the Eastern Final, and called them into the office and said, you know, guys, we're going to discuss this. I'm going to talk to your agent. We really want to keep you. We're committed to you. We like to. Or he's going to say, listen, here's the clear picture on this. I suggest that you talk to your agent. We're going to try to do the best we can for you. Maybe if you want to sign with us, we're trying to position you with a team. But we have other plans. And once this date hits, we're not going to protect you. So get ready. Some of these players have had that conversation already. That's why as Frank and I in the show, we talked about a couple players, I don't want to backtrack, that have kind of felt a little bit of uneasiness about the 16th because they already know that they're not being protected. And that conversation with the GMs has already happened, guys. So if I walked out of that room, I would call my agent up and say, okay, listen, this is what they just told me. Here's the deal. Start fishing me around. And Caleros, a couple weeks ago, was looking for a new agent. Why? Because that agent is trying to maybe get him something in the NFL. You know, it's a dream wish, but at least he's thinking of taking an opportunity. And why would he be doing that? Why wouldn't he just come out and say, I'm re-signing with the Argos because my best interests are with them? No, the GM already talked to him.
I got another question for the gene pool. But short form for genius. What about now? I forgot my question. I heard John, and it just blew right out of my head. I'm going to remember it. Okay. It has to do with signing players. Okay. There's a negotiation. Once a player is signed as a free agent, does the CFL allow, or do they allow a team to match the offer and keep the player? I'm trying to think, is that the CFL that does that?
No, the NFL does that. NFL and NBA does that.
I don't believe that's in the CFL.
Okay. So then I guess what I'm trying to do is set the table here on how we're thinking. So you better make an offer to a guy you want to keep that's bigger than the other guys are offering.
Correct.
All right.
Uh-huh. Well, Frank, it's very rare that we hear that there's a bidding war for somebody in the CFL. The management, the GMs have this theory. If you can get better, be our guest.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. Unless you are a super, superstar, and then it's a kind of a little bit of a different picture. And then again, that superstar only has maybe one or two markets that can afford him on a full-time basis. You know what I mean?
I have a question for you here, guys.
Oh.
Well, let's just say Jim Barker had this conversation with Zach Caleros and says that we are going to protect Ricky Ray. There's no debate there. You're going to be unprotected. You're a free agent. You know, you should be a starting quarterback in this league. I give you permission to go find another team. Can he do that now?
I'm not sure about that, because that's giving up an option without knowing you need it or don't. Don't you think? Like, that's why the negotiation list is so important, because they're assets. They're future assets. And let me underline future. And those assets that are out there, the negotiation list is there for the reason that if something bad happens, like maybe your running back turns up lame, you know, you can't have people negotiating with something that you need. You know, there has to be some sort of, you know, ground rule, right?
Well,
Ricky Ray's getting a car accident next week.
You're right, Frank and Chris, but only because this is a different situation here. We got the expansion draft going on, and we got the negotiations with the CFL Players Association.
But,
so,
John, you can't pick off a free agent off a team's roster.
Well, let me tell you why I'm telling you. You didn't let me about the Players Association. Some players don't want to sign until that's signed. They sign now, and they're leaving themselves out the door maybe a few thousand dollars more than they would have gotten after the contracts with the union has been signed. So there's going to be a lot of agents, guys, that I have a feeling will not be jumping on, I want to get re-signed right away. We saw Fantuz.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
But those are automatics there, and they're giving him, you know, whatever he wants, basically. They re-signed him because he's happy. I don't think him waiting for the players, but it's the lower marquee players, the ones that are really part of that union and are making 45, 50, and if they fight for the strike and more money, they'll be getting 75, 80, which makes a huge difference for those guys, you know? And so a lot of things up in the air right now, and everything comes down to money.
Yeah, that's basically what it comes down to, man, is the money.
Well, it always comes down to the money, and it's because of that money, you don't fool with somebody's, you don't cut somebody's grass. You understand what I'm saying? And the negotiation list is somebody's grass. And the negotiation list is somebody's grass.
But if Jim Barker right now released Caleros, if he released him, then he's fair game.
Yeah, but he hasn't released him because he's an asset, a good asset.
Yeah. Well, Ricky Ray could get in a car accident next week, and then what the hell would you do next season?
Exactly.
Well,
you know,
Frank,
break a leg or something. Nothing bad. Nothing bad. We're not saying anything
bad. Frank, you told me a story.
Was it Ty Domi that was changing some curtains? No, Mike Palmateer was changing some curtains in his house, and he slashed the inside of his arm, and he was done for 6 months. Yeah, stuff like that can happen.
Yes, it can.
Go ahead, John.
Well, you were telling me a story, and we're going to not name the player, but you said of somebody that, you know, it was very nervous and uneasy about the draft because he really likes where he is, and it would be a little bit kind of a sad moment for him and his family if he did get uprooted, okay? I mean, these are the kind of things that are at play right now. That player that you spoke of before had that talk with the GMs or the GM that he belongs to and was already told, here's a scenario. That's the reason
John, I understand what you're saying, and you're right. But let me just say that you may not be totally right. And here's how I'm going to tell you you're not totally right. A lot of GMs are going to play it close to their chest, are going to play their cards close to their vest. It's not many players they have to keep. And what he could have said, what a GM can say to a player is, he may not tell any player they're safe. He may not tell any player he's safe. I'm going to go on the limb here and say, I'm going to go on the limb and say that he might tell some key players he needs to know, let them know out of respect because of you know, their type of personality or how important they are to the team. But he may have some guys, two or three. They got to protect here. The point is, they can't protect everybody. But they don't want to tell. They don't want to tell the guys that are on the edge that they're not going to pick them, because that guy, when he comes to training camp next year, is going to remember that.
Well,
don't you
Frank,
think?
You know who the players
I
find
I
out
would.
From. You
I
know who
I
the
would.
Players. You know who the players find out from. The next
staff.
Most. The next most important. No. The next most important person in line that nobody ever thinks about, but that's the third person who always gets told of a new trade. He's the guy who gets the phone call instantly when the trade is made, because the jersey has to be made for that player, and the uniform and the equipment has to be provided. And that's the training manager, okay? Each equipment manager on each team is the third most important vital person who gets informed about changes on the team. And I know for a fact that those guys already know, because they've been told by the management, here, put this equipment aside, put this guy's jersey, we're printing, because everything that we get to buy in the spring has to be ordered now. Unfortunately, we order all our stuff from China, okay? And the Bolt logo jerseys, when they released them back at the town hall, weren't available because it took a month to get here. That's crazy. You order something on the CFL,
and you want to get a custom made, it takes you 2-3 weeks because they got to get the order from China, and then it gets delivered to you. So the equipment managers, they know it, okay? And that's who the players go to. So when the player doesn't have to hear from the GM, he can just go to his buddy who's been massaging his sore muscles the whole year and ask him, hey, listen, do I have a chance here? Have my jerseys been ordered for next year? Simple as that, guys. And that's where the players get that impression and get a sick feeling in their stomach that they might not be coming back because perhaps they had a talk with, you know, their second best buddy on the team, and that's the equipment manager. Something
okay.
to think about.
Okay. If we can trust CFL.ca, okay?
Yeah.
Any pending free agents with prearranged deals not taken by Ottawa, could register their contract with the CFL following the expansion draft, thus limiting the potential free agent pool.
Mm-hmm.
CFL players have 7 days.
Their own team.
That's what I'm looking for. But it doesn't. I think that is with their own team too. I'm going to say that CFL players have 7 days to file their contracts with the league. Otherwise, the deal is illegal. However, proving the violation took place is very difficult. Here we go.
Yeah. No one can ever prove the violations. They happen all the time. They're happening right now as we speak.
They are.
All the guys are looking up stuff right now.
No, I'm not. I'm not in. I don't have a computer.
Oh.
I'm without internet, man. I'm sitting in the dining room now.
There you go.
Cell coverage.
Okay,
no, you have to freestyle.
Here we go, guys. Here we go, guys. Here's the line we're looking for. Once the Ottawa draft is complete, CFL teams will have exclusive negotiating rights with their prospective free agents until mid-February. Those not re-signing with their former clubs prior to February 15th will become free agents and able to negotiate with any squad. And that is clearly your understanding, Christopher, and you are 100% right. You win the $100 Monopoly money.
Yay.
I don't know when I've been wrong.
Oh, see? I had a feeling that was going to come
up. When your BC Lions lost.
Oh!
I wasn't wrong. I told you they were going to lose.
Come on. You were hoping they would win. Yeah, in Saskatchewan you said they would lose. Yes, true.
Yeah, they were going to lose. I have no doubt there.
And yet they almost made a liar out of you. Or wrong.
Yeah, they almost did.
They almost did.
But
If not for the officiating, that's been rectified.
Okay. Yeah.
So where are we going to go now?
Okay, we're going to give Mike a chance. And, Mike, what did you think of the officiating this year?
Officiating was up and down, man. Like I said on the other show the other day, my only problem with officiating was the roughing the passer calls. Some of them, like I said, you know, for motion, and, you know, some of them are not roughing the passer calls. Some of them are for motion of the guys just hitting the quarterback, pushing them down. But overall, besides that, I mean, you know, they did pretty well. I mean,
then,
you know,
the reason I'm asking you this question, it's not a loaded question, but it's a question that it's, you know, like in a courtroom, it's a leading question, right? And what it leads to is today they hired a new vice president of officiating. And Chris and I did some research before Chris's computer went crapola, or his internet went crapola.
Yeah,
and we found that this guy, the new guy, doesn't come from the management or coaching side of the league. He comes from a very strong officiating side in his career. He's a World Cup baseball referee. He was the head of the referees for the World Cup of baseball. He also the world in Canada. He is he was the director of umpiring in Canada. This guy has a lot of officiating experience, but more than just the experience of officiating, he has experience organizing and training officials specifically. How do you like that? By that definition, how do you like this official? And do you see maybe looking at your concern, which is roughing the passer, this guy might be able to teach these guys a little better about what should be and what shouldn't be roughing the passer.
You missed something there, John. Hang on a second,
okay,
Mike.
Go ahead,
Chris. No,
correct. It's okay. Go.
Mike, he is also 24 years a CFL referee.
Okay.
So he's not. Frank made him sound like an umpire from baseball.
Yeah.
He's a CFL referee for the last 24 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows our game inside and out.
But he has organizational skills that he can apply to his trade.
Above and beyond what we would imagine.
Okay.
What we've had, anyway.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, that's true, man. I just hope that the officiating be a little better than what it was. That's all, especially with the roughing the passers calls. Anything else, I didn't really have a problem with it.
Okay, one last thing on the officiating. We can close the book on the officiating. Do you like the two flags you get to throw, disputing a call, and then that's it, whether you're right or whether you're wrong?
The challenge flags.
I'm okay with the challenge flags, man. I mean,
the way it is constituted now, you get to make a challenge, and if you're right or if you're wrong, you still lose one challenge.
Okay. I thought they lose a timeout. They don't lose a timeout?
Yeah, they do. No matter what, even if they lose timeout
They lose their flag. They lose their challenge. They have two timeouts.
Hang on. I don't agree because, John, isn't it true Milanovic lost the timeout and the flag in Hamilton, the game we went to?
No, he just lost the challenge. He didn't lose the timeout.
And he lost the timeout.
No, because He won the challenge on that one where it was a tackle, but he got his ankle and they didn't see the touch on the ankle and he had to call the challenge in.
Well, what I'm telling you is I think Mike agrees with what I'm saying. Mike thinks he lost a timeout. Mike is right. He's right. He did lose a timeout on that call. But he also lost the challenge.
He didn't lose a timeout. I think he had to call a timeout to call the challenge.
Okay.
Something like that.
All right, but anyway, Mike, you understand the concern that the three of us have is that it's not fair to make a challenge and you win it and then you lose the ability to make another challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I think they only get, maybe two challenges a game or something like
that? That's it. Right or wrong, you only get two, which isn't right.
Yep, right or wrong.
If the referee's got a thing against you and you piss him off and now he decides he's going to make you pay, he can.
Yes, they can. Referees can determine the outcome of a game.
And if he's mad at you and you can't even say, hang on, buddy, you're wrong, if you can't even say that, that's just pathetic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's going to happen, but you know, if it can, then you got to stop it from happening, in my opinion. That's what sports is all about. You see a hole, you fill it. And to me, that's a hole. They should have the ability to have two mistakes a game where the coach has two challenges that he's wrong about, and then he's done.
Lose your timeout.
Okay.
If you challenge a third time and you lose it, you shouldn't have to be able to stop doing that. You should then lose a timeout. And then if you continue to challenge and continue to lose your challenge, then you get a delay of the game penalty, and it's like 10 or 15 yards. You should not be stopped from challenging a play.
Okay. Now, we also didn't, John, you didn't, I don't think we got really, I didn't get to hear whether Chris agreed with it. The other thing we talked about with refereeing is at 2 minutes, with 2 minutes left in the game, the game is automatically handed over, not still in the officials' hands, but it's in the sky where people are watching the game. And if they see something that's illegal, they can interrupt the game and call the game from the sky, watching TV for the last 2 minutes.
Well, the NBA does that.
Right. And the theory is that the most important play that goes wrong is the last one. If it goes wrong,
the last
that's
2 minutes.
Right?
Yes and no. And it should be anything past a 3-minute warning.
Okay, then that because we have a 3-minute warning, not a 2-minute
right.
warning, it would make sense.
Yeah.
Sure. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah. I don't really have no comment on that, man.
Okay, so
well,
what do you want to talk
this,
about? No, kidding.
Frank, let me ask him this. Frank,
okay.
Mike, what do you think of the format that they have in the college? You are down in the States, where the booth upstairs challenges automatically things that are possibly don't look right. Perhaps the placing of a first down or inbounds. It doesn't have to be challenged by the coach, which they do have challenges, but it's automatically mm-hmm. challenged by the referee up in the sky. And you see how efficient that is. They make a decision within 15 seconds.
Right, right. You know, it's efficient because if you think about where they're looking from, they're looking from the sky from the boxes. They can see everything from up top. You know what I'm saying? And
they have
all the
TVs there.
Yep. That's what I was about to say. They have all the TVs there, and they can get the close up camera angles. Close up camera angles. And you know, I don't see no problem with it, man. If you need to use the refs. Up top, use them, man. Use any refs that you need to make the right call on the play and on the flags.
It's important that people make the right call.
Mm-hmm.
The game should be the referee should not be part of the game. He should not be making the game change. He should be doing his job. Plain and simple.
And he should be
a factor.
He should have the most training he could possibly have to ensure that he's always ready to make the right decision.
Correct. And he should be sober.
And and he should have the support. He should have the support of management to not be fearful of correcting him when he's wrong.
Yeah, of course.
Right, but I think by John's definition of the previous guy, it seemed that he might have been distracted by protecting the officials unnecessarily.
Well, protecting and also having to be the fall guy for having to apologize for 2-3 public errors during games, like publicly having to come out and say they made a mistake. It's a biggie. It's like not one of those things, oh, you know what, it was during the game and we called the roughing penalty when it shouldn't. No, it was one of those where they made a mistake and it was a deciding factor, you know. And then they came back and apologized. Those are the ones that really, really hurt, you know. You can excuse one, but when you got a couple, you know, or two or three, that's one too many in my books anyways. And I think he took the fall for it.
Yeah, we just lost Mike. So let's move on now.
Yeah, he just texted me. He said he can't hear.
Yeah, no worries. So we'll go on to your team, Chris. Tell us about your team and the reporter. I'll help you out by.
What's left of it? They're being stripped just like the Argos are, or they're stripping themselves, I should say, right, Chris?
Well, yes and no. I mean. We got rid of two people that needed to go away, in my opinion. Jacques Chatelain should have been gone 5 years ago. Rich Stubler came in, and he never performed to what he did of his performance of old. I like the man. He's a brilliant defensive mind. He just didn't come in and do what he needed to do in BC. Our defense has always been very stellar, and the last 2 years it's been lacking. And is that because Benavides went to head coach and Stubler came in as the DC? Probably. So let's find out what's going on. Mark Washington being moved up into that position. Everybody loves Mark. He's a great coach. He's a personable guy. I think he's going to do extremely well in the DC position. I hope it's not over his head. But from all reports from my friends who are BC Lions, I've got several of them on that I talk to on a regular basis. They believe in him 100%. So I'm really confident in that. I am not 100% sure that the rumor of Paul LaPolice coming to BC is confirmed and done it. I understand right now that they're still also talking with George Cortez.
Yes.
So
that's the one. So, that's the one this week. The name that's. The name that moved into the carousel that wasn't there last week.
Yeah. Well, Cortez says that he is not available when he was asked by Winnipeg to go to Winnipeg. He says, I'm not available. I'm staying with Saskatchewan. And then all of a sudden he said, yeah, I'll go to Toronto, or I'll go to BC, or I'll go somewhere else. So he just didn't want to go to Winnipeg.
Okay.
Now, that's as a coach, not as the head coach.
Yes, that's correct. I don't know why he's moving sideways in the league. You know, most people will move up. They'll go from an OC to a head coach, or they'll move up from special teams to a coordinator or whatever else. But very rare do you ever see a coach move sideways into the same position unless he really doesn't like where he is. And it sure sounds like George Cortez does not like being in Regina.
Wow.
That's what it sounds like.
He didn't want to be in Winnipeg either.
Well, it sounds like also, remember this as well, there's a lot of rookie coaches out there and a head coach who, you know, is going to – you have to admit that Benavides this year, he's on a short rope, don't you think, with the Grey Cup coming to BC?
I didn't think he should ever have been in that position.
Okay, so we agree that maybe Cortez is going to go somewhere where a job will appear. Like, Winnipeg isn't it.
As a defensive coordinator?
No, or I mean offense. Like
no,
head coach.
Cortez
I mean
is that. Coming in as an offensive coordinator.
Right, and like he was in Saskatchewan, but he wants to be a head coach.
You're saying he's coming into BC because you think Benavides is going to get the rug pulled out from underneath him, and Cortez has the possibility of being promoted from offensive coordinator into head coach.
Well,
and I think
BC,
that that's exactly the same reason why Paul LaFelice would be going there.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's really why I wanted Dave Dickinson to come to Vancouver.
Yeah.
Dickinson still owns his house here. He still has said that he wants to come back to BC and coach.
Huh.
Okay, he said that when he was – he definitely publicly said that when he was a quarterback coach with Calgary. And when they promote – they should have got rid of Chapdelaine, brought Dickinson in, and Benavides and Dickinson fight over the head coach position, and I would have had a beautiful team.
Yes. And,
but
and
they wouldn't get let go of Chapdelaine.
And they let go of him too late. Dickinson signed a contract for another, 2 or 3 years?
Well, no, because – I think Dickinson was pretty much settled with Calgary as soon as he got promoted to the offensive coordinator.
There
you
go.
You weren't going to steal him unless you actually gave him the head coach position, which was already labeled for Benavides. So in BC, it was another matter of, and I love the guy that bits, Wally Buono, but he's just too loyal to his people. And he was too loyal to Benavides. He was too loyal to Chapdelaine. He was too loyal to Dickinson when he was a quarterback, when Casey Printers was ripping up the league. He's just too loyal to his people. And that can be a fault.
Let me welcome back Mike again. And also we have Rob J. Emery with us. Rob, say hello.
Hey, guys. What's up?
Hey, Rob.
What do you want to throw into the mix here?
I don't know. What are you guys all talking about here?
I got a question for him, Frank.
We were actually, for Rob. Robbie, we were talking about you.
Oh,
about
no.
Me? Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, Frank,
I
got a question for Robbie.
Guys.
I'm only kidding, Robbie. Go ahead. John will ask you a question. John will ask
all
you a
right,
question.
John.
Okay, Rob, listen. So we hear now that Campbell's in Ottawa. The GM and him have said in the newspaper that they're definitely going after an experienced quarterback in Ottawa. They're not going to come in starting off with a rookie.
Okay.
So, that being said, what's the option? We got a couple in Calgary. We got one in Hamilton.
I take
which
the one
out
in
of
Hamilton.
Well,
it's
you got
Burris.
It's
gonna be Burris. Because Chris has hit it on the nail a little bit last week. It looks like the Caleros might even head over to Hamilton, perhaps. So if that's the choice, if it's Burris, Glenn, Tate, perhaps.
Matt Nichols.
That's who I would take.
Good one. Okay. What would you take,
You don't
Robbie?
Read my posts, do you, John?
Oh, I read them. It's just that you post so much, it's hard to remember all of them.
Matt Nichols is in the mix, guys. Don't forget Matty.
Nichols is the guy I want here in Toronto.
So, yeah, well, I don't know. So what do you think, Robbie? What would you like out of those picks for your experienced quarterback in Ottawa?
Well, Kevin Glenn, to me, is not an A1 quarterback. He's basically better second string quarterback. I'd take Burris here in Ottawa.
Burris is going to Ottawa. It's Winnipeg that's going to get screwed. They're not going to get a quarterback. They're not going to take Glenn because Glenn's already been there, done it, seen it, tried it, got the T-shirt. And Tate is Buck Pierce 2.0. And Matt Nichols is going to be the best bet for Winnipeg.
And he will be a great fit for Winnipeg.
Yes, if Ottawa doesn't take him as a second stringer.
If Ottawa doesn't take him and Winnipeg can get their hands on him, they'd be crazy not to.
That's
right. Now, why wouldn't Ottawa take him?
The draft.
Why wouldn't Ottawa take him?
I say they can take him, and they will.
They will.
The draft is coming up this Friday, right?
Right.
Yep.
Is it going to be, like, live on CFL.ca?
No, it's going to be boring as hell.
11 a.m.
Okay, here's what happens, guys, is Ottawa takes a player. Then all the other teams have 1 hour in which to resubmit their protection list.
Okay.
Because they're allowed to change it. And so this draft is going to go on for, like, 23 hours.
Yeah, but what do you mean Ottawa gets first pick?
Only one team picking.
Yeah, okay. Say Ottawa picks Burris.
Yeah.
And the order is... Hang
then
on.
Every
start,
other team gets an hour to
they're
pick.
They're not going
to
pick Burris.
Hang on.
Okay, hang on. They're not going to take Burris because Burris is a free agent.
Give them the order first. Give them the order of how, because what you said second has a lot of bearing on what order they pick in. How are they deciding to pick? The team that finished highest or the Grey Cup team and then the next team that finished highest in the standings?
What are you talking about? We're talking about the expansion draft for Ottawa. Ottawa is the only one picking.
Right.
Yeah.
But which team do they pick from?
They pick from any team they want.
Okay, no, hang on. I guess I'm not asking the question correctly. So the way I'll ask the question is I'll go through the motions. Ottawa will pick one player from every team. Then after that player's picked, the teams are allowed an hour, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
He didn't understand that.
I wasn't too sure about that because
yeah.
You guys said
so now you understand.
Ottawa gets to pick a player, but then every other team gets an hour to
After they pick their first player from every team.
Okay.
Right, and he picks the first round is like they pick a non-import. And then they pick an import, and then they pick a non-import.
That's right.
And that's the way that this is going to go back and forth. And then each team, then once they lose somebody, and if they lose one of their defensive backs, well, then maybe you can protect more defensive backs, or you can do
you might put
whatever
somebody
else
out there because you need.
Does anybody here know if Montreal's going to protect Chip Cox?
Because
he looks good in an Ottawa uniform.
I think that's
true.
A safe bet. I think Chip.
I think that's a pretty safe bet, buddy. Yeah. Okay, so what? Okay, so Ottawa's going to pick two quarterbacks. Okay?
Two quarterbacks.
Oh, Ottawa's going to pick two quarterbacks. Which two do you believe they're going to pick? They're not going to pick Burris. They're not going to pick Caleros. These are free agents. So I think their number one quarterback pick is going to be Matt Nichols.
Or Bull.
And then they're going to go after somebody else, possibly. Possibly Tate, possibly Glenn, but I think they're going to negotiate a free agency for Burris.
Yeah, but they could pick up Bull Vili Mitchell there.
No, he's going to be protected by Calgary.
Calgary. Yeah, they're not going to leave him open. Tate's. I agree with Christopher. Tate's had too many injuries.
Okay. What happened with Mitchell? Did you notice that they didn't play Mitchell at all in the last four games of the season?
Yeah, I noticed that.
Do you notice that?
Why would they?
And the reason why he did that, Huff didn't want anybody looking at him.
But why would any other team pick up Tate if he's injury prone?
Why did BC take?
why did BC pick up Buck Pierce in the last part of the season? Because he helped out our team.
Insurance.
He helped them out throughout the season.
He's a flyer.
They picked him up because they needed insurance just in case the other quarterbacks get hurt.
Exactly. That's why you would have Drew Tate. He's not going to be a number one quarterback in any team here unless Winnipeg needs him.
When your backup quarterback is the guy with should be, especially for good teams, a guy with an upside. He doesn't have to be all upside. He can be some down. You got a little bit of a gamble.
I'm gonna tell y'all something about another quarterback, and I know I'm gonna get ripped for it. I know I'm gonna get ripped by Chris for it, and I'm sticking to my guns, and I'm gonna stick with my sources. Don't be surprised if you see my boy BJ Hall in Ottawa. That's all I'm gonna say.
Well, I'm not ripping you on
that. No, that's again. You know they've got nothing. They've got nothing.
But
they can go for upside.
That has nothing to do with the expansion draft right now, okay? Winnipeg doesn't have a quarterback. They're going to have to go. I think they're going to go south. Don't be surprised if BJ Hall comes up here. Don't be surprised if Adrian McPherson comes back. Don't be surprised on a lot of things, okay? I think this is going to be an entire shock-filled off-season for everybody.
Absolutely.
Right. And the reason I bring up BJ, because when BJ played in the CFL his rookie year, he really didn't have a veteran quarterback to teach him the game. I'm not saying that he don't know the game, but when you come in as a rookie and you need to learn the CFL game, you need a proven veteran that you can learn behind. And
absolutely.
Cleo Lemon, Steven Giles, I mean, all due respect to them two guys, I'm not dissing them in any way, but they're not the caliber quarterbacks to teach a young and up-and-comer how to play the game.
No.
Now, if Ottawa was to bring BJ in, you need somebody like a Kevin Glenn or a Matt Nichols that he can learn behind.
Or a Burris. Or even a Burris.
Or a Burris, yep. Where he can learn behind. In 2 or 3 years, you will have your franchise quarterback because he done learned the game, he done learned the ins and outs, and he done learned from a proven veteran.
And he has to have an upside. A backup quarterback has to have an upside, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah,
and
let me throw something out there, guys. Lule has just had his third surgery on his throwing shoulder. If you were Wally Buono, exactly how much faith would you have in him for the future?
Zero.
Not much.
That's why I said don't be surprised if Caleros ends up in B.C.
Ooh, there
I don't
you go.
Think that BC is not the only Hamilton's not the only one that's going to be bidding for him.
He kind of shocked a lot of teams though this year, that Caleros guy. A lot of teams are looking at him right now, going, "Hey, we should try to get this guy with us because he seems like he's an upcoming starter." And he'd be perfect here in Ottawa.
And
BC does not have a backup. Calgary's not going to have a backup. Edmonton, more than likely, is not going to have a backup. Nichols is going to go. And you need one in Edmonton with the way the punishment Riley takes, okay? Do you consider Durant having a great backup? You know, who's Hamilton going to have for backup? Actually, Hamilton's got probably the best backup. Ricky Ray does not have a backup, okay? Winnipeg doesn't have a quarterback. We need a lot of quarterbacks in this league this year.
And there's a lot of them that have grown and given reason and given rise to the fact that they could move into the number one position. Kolaros is just the top guy on that list right now, as far as we're saying. But here's what I'm going to suggest. Exactly.
I don't think
he's a backup. I think he is going to be Calgary's starter.
No, he's going to be, but he certainly was at the beginning of this season.
No, exactly.
Kolaros.
No,
and
sure,
so was Riley.
Sure. Sure, but the point I want to make is that I wouldn't want to be Kolaros right now because he's getting set up to fail. He's going to end up with all the pressure, and I happen to believe the guy that gets picked up after Kolaros, in other words, the number two is going to be number two, and maybe even the number three guy, the third guy is going to be the best quarterback this year of the three.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yep,
I think that Kolaros. I think Kolaros has been blown up so hard, and so for him to meet up with the challenge, it's going to be almost impossible. That poor kid's going to have pressure on him like you wouldn't believe.
Hang on for a second, Frank. I agree with you. And if you put him into Ottawa, he's going to explode. If you put him into Winnipeg, he's going to explode. But if you put him into Hamilton with Kent Austin as his coach and the decent O-line and the decent receivers that they have in Hamilton, this kid is not going to explode. He may not prosper early on, and he will grow into that position, but I don't think we're setting him up to fail if he goes into BC, Calgary, or Hamilton.
Calgary.
What about Joey Elliott from BC?
You want him? You can have him.
What about
Nobody wants him.
What about Thomas DeMarco? He came out and he did pretty good.
No, he didn't.
You don't
he
think
only
so?
Beat the Riders.
He still played good though.
That's
you know,
only because the Riders had no film on him.
Yeah.
Once the teams out there got film on him, then he was ineffective. And that's very similar to Troy Smith. He came out and ripped up the first two or three games, and then after that he was mediocre.
And Kolaros.
Well, Kolaros, he won a lot of those games. All I'm saying is, you know, Bowie Mitchell is an unproven entity in Calgary. Okay? If I was Hufnagel, I would want somebody battling for that position next year. And it wouldn't be Tate, and it wouldn't be Glenn. I'm throwing that out there. The three top teams right now in this league that would be looking for Kolaros is BC, Calgary, and Hamilton. And Saskatchewan, if they were smart, but they got their head up. Never mind.
Now, do you guys think Edmonton's going to hang on to Kerry Joseph?
Well, I think it's a non-issue.
Edmonton? You said Edmonton hang on to Kerry Joseph?
Yeah.
Coach.
Yeah, they're gonna need somebody to hang on to. And if you're going to get a veteran to play behind Riley, man, you'd rather have Kerry Joseph because he's going to get you a couple of wins. He might go split.
Well, he didn't play that well the last year. In his relief role, he didn't play well.
Did Harris play Zachary Harris? Did he play at all this year? No, eh?
I think he was third string behind Joseph when Nichols was hurt.
What about
Compton? Can we also look at the idea that there's going to be more money? We know there's going to be more money for the players. We just don't know how much because the league is not going to be able to say, "Nah, you don't get nothing." That ain't going to fly. That'll just be an insult.
No, it's not.
Right? Oh,
right.
You think they can?
Mark Cohen has already said that the purse strings aren't going to be opened up. So, I mean, there's going to be some money on the table, but I'm not going to say that it's going to be enough to change people's lives.
Well, will it be enough will there be enough that comes out or the belief that more money's coming in or the feeling that there's more money in the CFL that we might be able to get done what Mike has always said, and that is bringing quarterbacks from the U.S., some new talented blood that might be a little better than what we usually see coming up here?
I don't think your cap is going to be raised enough to do that.
Mike?
I'm wrong. I'm going to tell you, I think you're kind of wrong on that because if you think of a guy, a third stringer in the NFL, how much do you think he makes?
800 grand.
He might not even make 800 grand. Sometimes you get a third string quarterback that make about 300 or 400 grand. Now, if he's good enough to come to the CFL and knock off a starter and become a starter and he get that $300,000 a year contract, man, I would suck it up and take the $100,000 loss to come to the CFL and prove myself and play. So if I get called back down south, I can get that $1 million contract. So you have a lot of guys, man, that can come up north from the south from the NFL. A lot of third stringers are going to be free agents. You got Drew Stanton in Arizona that's waiting to play. You got Kellen Moore and Detroit waiting to play. You got what's that guy name, man? You're going to even have what's that guy down there in Jacksonville that's going to be shafted after this season over with? Blaine Gabbert.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, you're going to have a lot of people that's going to be looking to play in the CFL. And then you're going to have Vince Young that might come up next year because Vince Young is not going to be in the NFL no more, so he's looking to play.
I don't know,
the point, the point being, guys, is that NBC and ESPN both are showing interest in the CFL.
Uh-huh.
And we sometimes some people want to get in before the door closes. You know what I mean? They don't want to be the last one on queue, last one in line. You know,
I don't know. I just don't feel, Frank, they're jumping in as much as they should be. Let me tell you why they're jumping in at all. There is a demand to fill time slots. And there is so much out there as far as telecommunication channels go that there's not only one avenue, but you have to fill the time slots. There's so many channels popping up, so many shows coming in that they have to fill these time slots. The Canadian Football League is a time filler for ESPN until the college season and until the real season.
But still, John, I agree. It's a time filler. I agree that they're looking for product, they're looking for stuff to air.
But it's a good thing.
But it's better than 10 years ago.
They
got to air stuff people want to see. Ratings mean something. The only difference is
yeah.
The ratings the percentages are on a smaller number, a smaller scale. If they think they can bring somebody in that can draw some attention, even TV networks gamble. Even TV networks gamble. And I believe in the CFL enough that if American football fans get a chance to see it, which they do, they will like it. Will it become the $100 million, $200 million contract? No, that's not what I'm saying. But if they can come in and remember this, in the U.S., a $40 million TV contract is nothing. That's peanuts.
Right.
In the U.S. In the U.S.
All day.
But it's,
right?
it's not going to come in the numbers that we're
all
hoping
I'm for.
The good thing is that some numbers are coming in. The numbers, at least, are not going away. They're coming
right.
in. There is something,
But you're getting good numbers from the U.S. from the Canadian Football League.
And it's worth it.
You got to remember, man, a lot of these guys that play in the CFL, man, a lot of the Americans, their families tune in to watch them guys play. It's not like what it used to be back in the day where a guy go to the CFL and don't nobody even know where he's playing at.
Mike,
yeah.
I'm going to give it to you straight, the reason why more Americans are tuning in. Because now, in the last 10 years, is gambling on CFL games up here, down in Las Vegas and Atlantic City, and you got a lot of stuff that you guys don't record that you're not allowed to do is internet gambling, right? But they use the CFL as an avenue to still be able to do that. They probably call friends up in relatives in Canada and say, hey, can you place a wager for me on the line for me or something, you know? But it's the attention of the gambling, with the gambling world.
Does that not raise the interest in the U.S. for people to watch and garner eyes for people to watch that channel? And that's all that channel wants. They want people to watch. Once people start watching, what I'm trying to say is $40, $50 million in the U.S. is nothing. It's chump change. But $40, $50 million to nine teams, that's $10 million a team, of which half, if you get another player, I'm trying to help Mike here. So now all of a sudden for a quarterback, you might be able to add a couple of grand onto him. Because that's how it's
uh-huh.
gonna work. Right? Now you
that's
add
that,
a couple
that's
of grand
how it's gonna work.
Right? And you add a couple of hundred grand to a $300,000 contract that a quarterback used to get and make it a half a million, now all of a sudden what Mike's saying makes a lot of sense. A lot of sense, where a guy says, I'll live with $100,000 less, but I'll play. I'll get better. And if I get better enough, I'm coming back to the NFL. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it's not about what's true here. It's about perception. And the players that Mike is talking about is they may have the perception that it's better to come up to the CFL for a little less and play, stay, and turn into nothing back home. Isn't that what you're saying, Mike? And if you hike up the dollars a little bit, that sure makes it even more attractive, doesn't it? A couple hundred grand in the Canadian Football League is a lot of money.
I mean, you offer me a couple of hundred grand. You better believe I'd be in that weight room and I'd be a 40-year-old wide receiver in the CFL right about now. Well, I'd take 50, 60 grand right about now.
It's all about dreams, man.
Yeah, you got a lot of guys, man. And I'm going to go back to Vince Young, that has to prove himself because he tarnished himself a little bit in the NFL when he was with Tennessee, and he tried to make up for it, but it just wasn't enough. So, you know, you give Vince Young a couple years in the CFL to tear it up, and just imagine if he came over there and win a Grey Cup. Come on, man. A dude that has a strong arm that can play on a CFL field.
Can he move?
And even if he doesn't go back to the NFL, he becomes the next Ricky Ray, and Ricky Ray makes $400,000 a year today without extra money coming in.
There you go.
$400,000 a year.
All you got to do, man, if you don't know anything about Vince Young, YouTube Vince Young and watch some of his highlights. He can throw and he can scramble.
A water boy makes more than $400,000 a year in the NFL.
A lot of them do, but then you got some third stringers.
I want to be a water boy for the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I was gonna say, Robbie, are you jealous?
Holy shit! Mm-hmm. Sitting there and I'm hearing, oh yeah, Ricky Ray, starter for Toronto, like one of the best quarterbacks in the league, getting $400,000 a season.
The best.
That's what he gets.
I'm like, then if you look at the other page or whatever, Waterboy Johnny Dick for the Buffalo Bills is making $80,000 a season.
Okay, Robbie, a Waterboy is not making $200,000 a year. Okay. So I was going to shut that one down. A water boy will be lucky to make $40,000-$50,000 a year. I don't care where he plays. We're talking water boy, not trainer.
Hey.
They're not
okay,
talking
but
about
equipment manager then.
Oh, okay. Now you're
That's
talking.
That's a different ballgame. Now you're talking about somebody really important.
Hey, let me come over there. I'll be a water boy.
Would you guys? How much do you think? That's a good question. That's a fun question. How much does an equipment manager?
Well, actually, my first year with the Ottawa Roughriders in 1991, I think I made $1,700 for the season. But we had like a Pepsi machine inside the locker room, which all the players went in, deposited money for like a drink or whatever. Well, at the end of the season, the equipment manager said, "Okay, everyone, come in, you know." Let's all go in the equipment room and empty the whole thing out. And I think it was like $300 or $400 inside that little friggin' pop machine. So it was like, okay, $100 to you, $100 to you, $100 to you. And it was just like, damn, I'm liking this now. You know?
Well, I hate to think.
You know? Back then it was like 1991.
Sorry.
I was 14 years old, you know? $100 to me was like, jackpot, baby.
All right. The water boys are a little older in the NFL, and a lot of those water boys, and so that we're clear, the people that dish out the water now have training in colleges, and that, you know, they're sports therapists. So, you know, it isn't your typical water boy now. I was just having fun with the conversation. I was just wondering, you know, because players make so much money. You know, they make so much money. How much does an equipment manager make, you know?
Let's do some research on that one.
I just think it'd be kind of interesting.
About 50,000.
Okay, good.
A season.
Well,
When I was the assistant...
Okay, Frank, write it down. Ask everybody.
Is there a line item on this league? The equipment. There's two guys in this league. One is in Toronto, and the other one's in Edmonton, I believe, who have been around for 3 decades.
And one in B.C. that's been around for like 3 decades.
Okay,
Cato.
Yeah, that's right.
Cato in B.C.
Those guys at the top, Danny Webb here in Toronto. They're at the top of the ladder. You can't compare their salary to Dwayne Mendrisiak. One guy at a time, guys. Robbie, please do us a favor. When somebody else is finished talking, then by all means step in. But we try to give you the courtesy of finishing your sentence and then let us follow through. Okay, all bud?
Right. Go ahead, John.
I know you get excited. So those two guys, we can't judge them by their salaries because I imagine they're making up in the 80s, okay?
Yeah.
They've been around for 3 decades. Yeah, you figure, even more, you know? So on average, I would imagine what Robbie said, probably around the $50,000 range as a manager, you know, a seasonal job, but whatever.
because when I was out in Hamilton, and the guy said to me, he says, well, when you come onto this team, you know, you'll be guaranteed $12,000 for the season for 7 months. So I was kind of like, you know, I didn't give a shit about money or anything. It was just, you know, I was out of the CFL for 12 years or whatever. I just wanted to be back in the CFL. I wanted to get that feeling back. I wanted to see what it was like, you know. And I didn't even look at anything on the contract. I just looked where it says sign your name, and I just signed my name. And that was it, right?
But hey, Robbie, if I could give you some advice, that was bad.
Yeah, I know. I got the short end.
Read the contract, okay?
Yeah, well, I got
the
short end.
We got 6 minutes left. Can I ask a poll question of everybody?
Sure. Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, okay, here's the rules to this fun little question here. We don't have a lot of time, so it's going to be real quick. I want you to name what position on a team, whether and ignore your physical abilities at this point in time, what position you would like to play, either player, coach, management. If you had a choice of anything on any team, tell me what it would be, and just don't assume that you can't be a running back or you can't be an O lineman or you can't be whatever. Whatever position you would like to play, tell me what and why. Frank?
Go ahead, John.
Frank, John.
You got a minute. Less
my
than a
question,
minute.
Frank, go ahead. Frank,
no,
go
no,
ahead.
I'm
asking Frank.
Oh, me? You know, there's
how
a lot of ways
Franks
looking.
Do we have?
I'm gonna do it in 30 seconds, and here's how I'm going to do it. My preference is to become a manager, and if I could be a player like a quarterback – and be talented enough to be a quarterback, and be smart enough, eventually what I'd like to be is a manager, because I really don't like the idea of the spotlight, and I love the hard work of figuring out statistics and that chess match of picking players and, you know, making the right decision.
Okay.
Cool.
I'll give you mine. I like to be director of operations, because especially in a city like Toronto – and I'm over a three-decade hardcore fan. I think I just got the gist of it of what might work here and what might not, what I was sick and tired of hearing and seeing, and being able to put my ideas and kind of get the fan base rotating in the right direction. That would be something that I would love to take an opportunity on, just to kind of give it my go.
Okay, can Bobby. I go next?
Yes. Robbie, go ahead.
I would love to be a punt returner. You know why? Because I'm 5 foot fuck all, and no one can catch a little guy running like a son of a gun with that ball in his hand.
Okay.
There you
good.
Go.
Mike?
I'll be a wide receiver. Reason being, because I played wide receiver in high school. And I also, didn't ever tell anybody this, but I also went to a Toronto Argonauts free agent training camp when I was 23 years old. And if it
what?
Wasn't for the... If it wasn't for the dick quarterback that I had and I couldn't throw the ball, I probably wouldn't have made the roster or team.
Wow.
Who was this dick quarterback?
I don't know who this dude was. He was trying to make the squad just as well as I was.
Oh,
what
okay.
year was that, Mike?
Huh?
What year was that, Mike?
I was 23 years old, man. Shoot. Whatever year it was, I was 23.
What year were you born?
I was born in 73.
86.
So we're looking about, we're looking about
95.
96.
Yep.
Wow, that was
agent,
just before Doug Flutie. Yeah. Anyway.
They had a free agent. They had a free agent camp out there in Jackson, Michigan.
We're down to the last
guys.
I found
am
an
I the
answer
last
to
one?
The question. You go ahead. But first, I found an answer to the question. $50,000 in equipment manager in the NFL a few years ago. Go ahead.
The position that I would like to have in the CFL, if I could pick any position regardless of financial ability or physical ability, I think I would just like to be an owner.
Oh, that's dirty. That's the best answer, correct?
I gave you guys the option of any position
sure,
you wanted.
That was a trick question. For some reason, I thought you meant player or management, not ownership, you dirty dog.
Hey, you know
I would like
I'd
to be an owner.
GM.
Good night, please.
No, if you want to pull me out of the owner position, I agree 100% with John Granger. I would be a director of operations.
There you go.
I'm not a stats guy. I'm a strategic. I like move chess pieces. I move pieces around.
Nice.
There you go. Nice.
And
that's
and
why the owners took their
position. Thanks for joining us. Okay. Good night, John. All right. You've been listening to Candid Frank Live, and tonight we had John Granger, Rob J. Emery, Mike Townsend, and, of course, Christopher Jones. And I'm Frank Sinisian. Thanks for tuning in. Got to turn you off. Bye, guys. Have a great night.
All right. Take care.
Hey, Debbie. Hey, see you.